Well, May is American Wetlands Month, as I said, and did you know that you could be living on a wetland? Many people don't know that, and my next guest will get you and I better acquainted with wetlands and tell us how we can protect and preserve them. And you can join our conversation as we visit with Katie Belfus. Katie is the Outreach Programs Director at the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. She's been with us many times. Always have a great time with her. And certainly if you have a question for her or maybe an experience to share, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And if you've got a nice wetlands photo, hey, we'd love to see that too, wouldn't we, Katie?
It would be great. Please post them.
Yeah, post them. And thank you.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
So May is Wetlands, American Wetlands Month. How is the Wisconsin Wetlands Association celebrating?
We are celebrating with a Facebook campaign, among other things, to shout out to the rooftops about the wonders and beauty of wetlands and all the important services they provide to our communities, like flood control and clean water and wildlife habitat and fabulous places for recreation. So if you haven't visited us on Facebook, take a peek and learn more about wetlands every single day.
As you know, some people say, well, wetland, I don't want to go once wandering around out in this wet area. But why should people, and that's not a good way to look at it, as you're going to tell me here, but why should people take time to explore them?
Well, for a long time, as you pointed out, people really disparaged wetlands. They were places of mosquitoes and swamp things and crazy monsters. There's folklore from around the world of different cultures speaking badly about wetlands because we didn't understand their importance in our natural environment and their importance to us, our human communities. And I mentioned some of those rules, flood protection, clean water. They really help to filter and clean our water before they reach our lakes, rivers, and streams that we value for recreation and drinking water, among other things. Great wildlife habitat, and they connect in so many ways to other communities that we value. I mean, lots of folks out in Wisconsin are duck hunters or hunters of other critters, and wetlands are often the go-to places for those critters for their reproduction and feeding. So great place. And they're beautiful. Larry, they're beautiful.
There
are so many gorgeous pictures of wetlands, and now they're really starting to come alive. There's lots of things starting to bloom, and wake up to your wetlands.
Yeah, wake up to the wetlands. That's a nice slogan. Wait, is that one that you have up on your website?
Well, we do, and our good partners over at the Wisconsin DNR have a publication called Waking Up to Wetlands, and so I have to give them props for that one.
Okay. Well, Bill in Oshkosh has a comment for you, a question. Hi, Bill. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I know Lake Beautimore in the 18th century was a giant rice field with a path of water going through it. Is there some document or book that describes the changes in wetlands over the years with the causes like building dams and things like that?
Boy, that's a great question, Bill. And off the top of my head, I can't come up with any one thing. I know we've lost half of our state's wetlands, and that's a lot. And within, you know, I'm going to have to go look that up and get back to you on that one, Bill, because I'd like to know that too.
Yeah, there's not one overarching book that comes to my mind anyway.
Yeah, and there are some, you know, this is a little bit more geeky and technical, but there are some web-based resources that show you maps of wetland soils, which is a really good indication of where wetlands were historically, because you don't have these special soils except where you have had or currently have wetlands. So that's one piece of the story, is just a sort of looking at a map and seeing where the wetland landscape was. There's got to be, I've seen some presentations from folks who show change over time in their community of where wetlands are and where they've been lost. But I'd love to have that book, Bill, so let's write it.
Oh, well, I was thinking of the changes due to boating and the paper companies on the Fox River and how that's changed water levels, et cetera.
Yeah, and a lot of the changes that caused the destruction of wetlands, we really thought were in pursuit of the public good. You know, it was converting land for agriculture, which is important. It was building homes and communities, providing spaces for industry. So all those were in pursuit of the public good, but we just have misunderstood, you know, we misunderstood the importance of wetlands, and now we're sort of playing catch up a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or email us at talk@wpr.org. And post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And if you got a photo, we'd love to see that as well. Well, you mentioned private wetlands or people living on wetlands and not even knowing it. First, maybe, and you do this, I think, pretty much every show, tell us what a wetland is or define a kind of a wetland. And then let's talk about how we can... How did we end up living on top of a wetland?
Well, it's an important question because I think one of the things that I didn't realize when I started this work was how hard it is for some for many of us to recognize wetlands on the landscape because they don't look one way. There's a lot of different kinds of wetlands, and it's one of the things I really love about them is there's wetlands with trees, wetlands with shrubs, wetlands with open grasses, with different flowers. So the three things that tie them all together and make them all called wetlands are, as I said before, the kind of soil that they have. There's special, very rich wetland soils that develop in wet conditions where mm-hmm. the vegetation can't break down in the water. So you've got these really rich black soils. Water at or near the surface of the soil for part or all of the year. And that's a really important thing because lots of wetlands are not wet year-round. Mm-hmm. So you might go in the spring and they're very, very wet from snowmelt and rain, but you might go back in the fall and they'd be bone dry. They're still wetlands. And then the third thing is plants. There's a lot of plants that have adapted special ways to manage all of the water that they're growing in, whether they have wet feet or whether they're plants that grow in standing water. And so those three characteristics, soils, water, and plants are the three sort of defining characteristics of wetlands. Now, what was the other part of your question, Larry? I got lost in that.
You know what? I'm going to hold on to that because Paul in Arcadia has a question for you that sort of relates to something we've been talking about. So let's go there. Paul, hi.
Hi. Thanks for the show. Really enjoy it. Had actually two questions. One, your comment on loss of half the wetlands in Wisconsin. I was wondering, what was the time frame that has occurred over?
Good question, and that's usually gauged to the time of European settlement, so the late 1800s in this part of the world, when the white folks came into the community and started developing and living here.
Is that accelerated for a time, and then has it slowed dramatically recently, or is there a rate of change?
I would want to go back to the data for that. I know that there's reports that come out every single year about the wetland loss because there's a national policy to have no net loss of wetlands. So there's a recognition that we do need to lose some of them in pursuit of other public good, but then we can also restore some that had been previously lost. And so there's a report that comes out every year that documents those changes and goes so far as to say, well, we've lost more of the cedar swamps, but we have more marshes than we used to, or some, you know, comparing the different wetland types. So does that answer your question, Paul?
It does. The second question, then you just touched on that was, can you kind of describe, I'm trying to learn and get better educated on this, the differences between swamps, marshes, and then the one I've been hearing more about is fens and calciferous fens, and what kind of differentiates all of those and what makes the fens so special?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, humans are the people that like to assign names to different kinds of things. Nature exists sort of on a continuum. But in at our organization, we talk about 12 different wetland types. And fen is one of the rarest in Wisconsin. And as the main thing there is that the main water supply for fen wetland communities is groundwater and often very mineral-rich groundwater and nutrient-rich in some cases. So minerals. So those are very rare communities because if the groundwater is damaged, you know, the flow of groundwater is changed by surrounding development or by changes in drainage and whatnot within the wetland, that community can be altered. And so it was always rare because it only occurred in these very specific locations, and it's become more rare and more, it's a very special community. But we have on our website descriptions of those 12 wetland types. We also have a nice little publication that you can, 4 pages, you can download and print from your computer that talks about and provides a little picture for each of those wetland types. So I encourage you to visit wisconsinwetlands.org and mm-hmm. follow the links there to get that information.
All right.
All right. Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. And I'm sure we have a link to that, to your site on my Facebook page as well. So if you're at the page, on my Facebook page, you can quickly click on it and get to Katie's. Terry in Oshkosh, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I also have a drainage question. We've got a piece of property, river bottom, that the river channel had naturally changed course after an interstate highway system was put in, and a number of back bows and oxbows and stuff were cut off. But the previous landowner basically opened up, the natural riverbank to allow those oxbows and stuff to drain. My question specifically, can we, plug those, ditches up to, take it back to the natural state that the river, try to create?
So let me make sure I understand the question, Terry. So there was a river with cutoff oxbows that were naturally cut off by change over time, and then a previous landowner reconnected those.
Oxbows, by the way, are oxbows. By the way, are what?
Oxbows are like if you've got a curvy river and there's a there's a big deep curve, and then at some point the channel changes and straightens out. That curve is still. It's still deeper than the surrounding landscape. And so often those are little really nice backwater areas, even if they don't have the main flow of the river channel. They often are still connected to the river when the river is high, and you will have flooding of those oxbow areas when the river is high. So those are wetlands, those oxbow areas.
Right. But what the previous landowner did for agricultural purposes, they basically ditched, to allow those oxbows to drain into the river versus being cut off.
Okay.
So can we, what's the proper procedure of, plugging up the ditch, to keep the flooded water in the oxbows, but not have them drain as rapidly?
Great. Great question. And
primarily for waterfall habitat.
Sure. And there are, I'm glad that you're asking who do we need to contact in order to do this, because you will need to get permission from the Department of Natural Resources and possibly even from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, although they have streamlined the process in cases like yours where the project is in pursuit of restoration of a wetland as opposed to the other way around. Why don't you call our office and we'll get you connected with the right folks to call in your community. And there's several groups, Fish and Wildlife Service, Ducks Unlimited, Wisconsin Waterfowl Association, who might be able to help you with some technical support in that regard as well.
Mm-hmm.
I missed the very first part of the program, so who should I call? Whose office?
Great. It's the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Our number is 608-250-9971.
608-250-9971?
Yep.
All right, Dave. Thanks a lot, Terry, for calling. Appreciate your call. 608-250-9971. If you want to get a hold of Katie's office directly. Katie Balfus is Outreach Program Director at the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. And we're going to keep talking about our wetlands right up until 12:30 today. And I'm certainly inviting you to join in. We'll be taking a look at the news coming up next. But there's a line open for you at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. We'll be back right after this look at the news. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mehler here. Glad you could join us today as we visit with Katie Balfus of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, talking about wetlands with her today and taking your questions, comments, your experiences at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Judy in Grand Marsh is on board with a call, so let's go there. Hi, Judy.
Hi. There was a wonderful program on Wisconsin Public Television last night called Leave It to Beavers, and it was about the new appreciation of their engineering skills and the possibility of actually using them to help create waterways where we want them. They had a whole repopulating and moving and rescuing beaver program, and I wondered if we had any such a thing in Wisconsin.
I love beavers, and I'm super bummed that I missed that show. Someone told me about it this morning, so I'm going to have to go find out if there's a rebroadcast coming up. Beavers are great wetland makers. They don't always make wetlands where people want wetlands to be. So there's, you know, sometimes that can cause some issues. I didn't see the program, so I can't talk about the specifics that you refer to, Judy. But certainly I know that the Department of Natural Resources has a beaver management plan, a group of people who meet to talk about what should our approach be to beavers. I don't know that they're looking at beavers as a as restoration partners, but I think that's kind of an intriguing idea.
Yeah.
Well, just one thing they had was a beaver whisperer who had discovered that if he creates the sound of water with even a recorder where he wants them to build, they go and they are motivated to continually patch up a sound of moving water.
That's hilarious.
So he could get them to build just exactly where he wanted to.
Thanks for talking about the show. I'd love to see that.
Yes, it was great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Judy. Thank you very much for calling. Great. I didn't see it either. So that's you and I are both going to have to look that one up.
That's right.
It sounds like a lot of fun. You can join in, too, with your questions or comments or experiences to share at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call as we visit today with Katie Belfus of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. A caller says the Southeastern Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission might have old maps of wetlands.
Mm-hmm.
He says Don Reed over at Sewer Pack had a map of Milwaukee area wetlands that dated back to 1879.
And I think that's true. I think locally there are those maps. I just couldn't come up with one that would be sort of statewide. But I definitely contact your regional planning council to ask if they have such a document.
And Dennis in Maplewood, Minnesota, wondered if the Wisconsin Wetlands Association website would have maps of existing wetlands on it.
We don't have maps of existing wetlands per se on our website. I will tell you what we do have, and then I will tell you another place to go for maps of wetlands. We have a publication and a series of sites, 100 sites around the state, that we designated as Wetland Gems in 2009. And Larry, we talked a lot about that at the time. And those resources, those wetlands are all high quality wetlands. They're distributed all around the state. They represent all the different kinds of wetlands that are found in Wisconsin. So that's a great way to get connected with wetlands that might be in your community. So we have all those materials on our website. Just look for the Wetland Gems logo on our front page there. If you're looking for maps of wetlands in a particular community, the DNR has a surface water data viewer, which is an online mapping system where you can zoom into a particular area and then turn on certain features of a map. And one of the things that they can show are you know, maps and wetland soils and various other things. So hopefully that answers your question there.
Mm-hmm. And Lee in Green Bay, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yeah, I just have a comment and a question. My comment is, how did Cabela's new store in Green Bay get away with building on that wetlands location? And my question is, why does the DNR allow, if you want to build on a wetland area, if you buy some property elsewhere and make a wetland, how can they do that?
Lee, two very good questions and comments. The Cabela's store was that the property there was issued a permit by the Department of Natural Resources using some special legislation for that particular site that sort of exempted it from the normal process. So that was something that our organization worked to prevent. Sadly, we lost in that case. But it did raise the discussion of your second question, which is this whole idea of mitigation. And the idea is, if we destroy a wetland in place A, we'll just build a new one in place B. And I will, we always say, let's protect the wetlands that we have first, and let's do everything we can to protect those. If we have an unavoidable instance where we really need to fill a wetland or destroy a wetland, let's at least try to do something for the positive. And that's what mitigation is. It's saying we're going to make up for the loss in this place A by building one in place B or restoring one that used to exist somewhere that it no longer does. That's a decent second choice option if you're careful about where you put that mitigated wetland, that second wetland. When you take away the wetland at point A, you lose the services, the flood control, the wildlife habitat, the water cleaning, all those various services that we've been talking about. You lose those in place A. And if you put, if your place B for your mitigated wetland is on the other side of the state, you're not helping compensate for that loss. And so one of the things with mitigation is making sure that it's within the same watershed and as close by as can be. We also have to pay special attention to if you're destroying a cedar swamp and then you're replacing with a marsh, those are also not the same. And so it's, mitigation is a challenging thing. It's something that's important. We need to do it because wetland loss is inevitable, but we need to be careful about it. The new state law does mandate now mitigation in cases where you can't avoid or minimize wetland impacts. And so that's where you hear about this, because now it's, their perception is that it'll be easier to fill because you just have to build another one. It's not quite as simple as that. It's better than nothing, but we say protect the original ones.
And Cabela's, then evidently money talks. When you have the money, you can push stuff through like that. Is that true?
That's a whole nother radio show.
Right. And I think we should have one.
Yeah, I think you're right, Lee. Thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call. And I want you to join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 with your questions. Jeff emails and said, I have a subdivision. This relates again to building. I have a subdivision under development across the street from my property. The development has delineated wetlands within its boundary. Can you describe what can and what cannot be done in those wetlands by the developer? They may have not done anything major, but I just want to know in case I see activity that's not allowed.
Well, first, Jeff, let me just thank you for being the eyes and ears of your community and for being aware of the need to keep an eye on these things, because that's how a lot of wetlands in communities get protected. So kudos to you and everybody else who's paying attention and wanting to do the right thing. Wetland delineation is where a professional person with the right technical expertise comes in and draws a line, a boundary, where on one side of the boundary it's wetlands and on the other side of the boundary it's not wetlands. This is a technical issue. In my opinion, it's sort of silly, because how do you draw a line? It's a connected community, and your impact just outside the line will affect what's on inside the wetland. So that's also another conversation. Technically, and definitely, I welcome you to contact our office for more specific information on this, because it depends on, there's a lot of details that I don't have right in front of me right now. But fill is prohibited. So dumping material of any kind in the delineated wetland area is prohibited. There are some restrictions on digging in the area because of where do the spoils go, where does what you dig out, where does that go? Fill, and it can be soil, it can be concrete, it can be lots of different things. There also are shoreline zoning rules that guide, that sometimes have impacts on what people can and can't cut in terms of tree harvesting and whatnot. So that's a local issue, not a state issue. But definitely call our office and to give us more information so we can provide you with some more help.
All right. Bob in Pewaukee, hello.
Hello.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
A couple of years ago, on my tax bill, they added a water runoff fee. And I was just wondering, who started the water runoff fee? They said the DNR did. But where does my water go now that it wasn't going 20 years ago? Nothing has changed.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bob, I don't know your situation, and policy is not my specialty, but I will do my best at answering your question in a general way. In many areas of the state, and I don't know if this applies to you, the amount of impervious area, so cement, concrete, asphalt, has increased, and communities are having to manage the increase in runoff because the water can no longer soak through areas that have been paved or made impervious. And so they're having to raise money in order to pay for engineered solution to manage that extra water. I don't know if that's behind your particular runoff fee. I just can't answer that question right now, but I know that it's an issue that lots of communities are recognizing. They didn't think all that concrete was going to have a big impact, but now they're seeing with our increased storm events and big rainfalls that they are having a really big issue that they need to solve.
Hmm.
Well, that's what they get for filling in the wetlands, because not too far from me, they're building stores and stuff that used to be wetlands, and now the water doesn't have any place to go, so now I'm paying for that.
Yep.
For digging ponds or whatever, so the water has some place to go.
And it's all the more reason for citizens like you to get engaged at the local level with your community to help them do planning that incorporates wetlands in that planning process. Where do we still have wetlands? How can we do best to protect them? Where could we restore them in our community to manage our local issues? So get involved, Bob.
Thank you very much for calling, Bob. Appreciate it. We had Jim emailing us and is interested in purchasing some property in Winnebago County. The GIS map shows parts of the land as wetland indicators. What information do I need to know in order to determine if this land is buildable for a personal residence? Who do you contact?
Yeah, great question. And there's several different people that you're going to want to contact. You're going to want to contact your county office that would issue any sort of permit. They can tell you what local ordinances or rules they have that you need to follow. You need to contact your water management specialist with the Department of Natural Resources to find out if there's any restrictions on what you can and can't do on that particular property. They'll know what questions you have to ask and what information you have to bring to them in order for them to answer that question. And then in some cases, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has jurisdiction over wetlands. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they do. It's tricky, but it's best to just call and find out first, because it's always worse. It's always better to find out first, and then you don't have the inconvenience of somebody coming around at the end saying, hey, you forgot to do X,
this.
Y, or Z. It's going to be a bigger pain for you. So there are those three places that I would stop.
And you actually are, will be a private landowner. You guys are doing a lot of work with private
landowners. We are stepping up our work with private landowners because we keep coming upon the statistic that 75% of Wisconsin's remaining wetlands are in private ownership. Many of us think about, oh, yeah, wetlands, the DNR owns those, or they're in the national forests, or those are all taken care of. But 75% of the ones we have left in Wisconsin are privately owned. So our organization is looking at what should we do? What can we do to help those individuals recognize that they own wetlands? Sometimes they might not know. Sometimes they know, but they don't know what to do with them. There's lots of folks telling them what to do to manage their woodlands or their uplands, but they don't really know what to do with wetlands, and they're really curious for that information. And some of them know and need more help connecting with technical resources so that they can care for and manage those. So we're putting together right now, just about to go to press, with a wetland landowner handbook that walks through those things. What are wetlands? Why do they matter? And how can I care for them on my property? And we'll be branching out and doing more workshops and programming for private landowners as well. So if that's something that you're interested in, we have a website. We have a couple of pages on our website called My Healthy Wetlands. You can go there from our main page that provides links to a lot of different resources that are helpful to wetland landowners to get more information.
And one place where you can learn about wetlands, too, is sort of on field trips, just to learn to appreciate them more. And I know you know of several activities and so forth that are going on in support of wetlands.
Sure. And our organization's mission statement includes the word enjoy, because we all feel really strongly that one of the best ways to protect wetlands is to fall in love with them and to really spend time witnessing the beauty that they share with us. And there are tons of events all over the place. Our Wetland Gems sites that I talked about before, many of those are at places like the Ridges Sanctuary or Nisida National Wildlife Refuge, where they have education centers and they offer field trips and programs and events that you can avail yourself of. So reach out to your local neighborhood community nature center or other group in your community and say, hey, what wetland programming do you have? How are you celebrating American Wetlands Month?
And you can join in with your questions or comments as we talk with Katie Belfus of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. And you can do that. Are you going to be doing some of that? field tripping yourself, Katie?
Well, we just scheduled one of our interns working in our office right now, just finished her PhD, and we just scheduled a field trip to go and visit all of her sites and their fens, those communities that we were just talking about earlier in the program. So we scheduled that coming right up. And my kids and I always get out to wetlands as soon as we can. They love frogs. We led a frogging trip for our kids' school, elementary school.
Oh.
Took a bunch of families out there and listened for frogs, and we heard cranes going by and all kinds of, I think we even had a woodcock, and that was very exciting.
Ah, we have more callers. Our lines are pretty well full here, so I think we will go to John in Appleton next. John, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm just calling. I have some property up in the Privis area with Charles Stream on it, but I'm just curious as to what department or what assigned area of the DNR actually does the destruction of the beaver dam. So I'm an avid trout fisherman or whatever, so I understand trout unlimited, but we also used to have beaver dams back there, and destroying, not having them there at all anymore, it's destroying the wetlands back there now, and with the wood ducks gone and all this other stuff, it's really becoming a woodland rather than a wetland now.
Yeah, and it's a challenge. A lot of the beaver control activities are when there's a threat to a roadway or some other infrastructure where the water buildup is going to damage that. And so in some cases, that's where it happens. I don't honestly know which part of the DNR is responsible for implementing that. As I said, there is a beaver management committee that makes the decisions about what the organization's policy is. And if you can follow up with our office, I can give you some contact information for that group. I don't have it with me today, but I'd be happy to share it with you.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Matt in Walworth, you are next. Hi, Matt.
Hi.
And what's
I have is, the question I have is, I've got some property with a wetland area on it. And I was just wondering, is there any programs that is offered through the state or the DNR to help maintain or restore those?
Great question, and kudos to you for wanting to do that. That's excellent. There are several programs that help provide funding to support private landowners' work on wetlands. Many of them are more to restore former wetlands, and so current wetlands, doing enhancement work on current, non-destroyed wetlands. We're working on that. Right now it's a little harder to come by money for that, but the Natural Resources Conservation Service has a wetlands reserve easement program that provides funding to landowners for wetland restoration. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Partners for Fish and Wildlife program has a similar private landowner program. And so those would be two resources to contact because those folks all know each other and work together and would be able to provide you with some technical assistance about where to go for that kind of support.
Yes, I just would hate to lose what I've got. So.
Absolutely. That's so wonderful. And we have a wetland restoration handbook that we published, probably 10 or 15 years ago now, that has a lot of terrific information in it. And it's available from our office, or you can also, the DNR helped us publish the second edition. So you can contact the DNR for a copy of that as well. The Wetland Restoration Handbook for Wisconsin Landowners.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. If you're living on wetlands, it may require some sort of special care for the property.
Yeah, the most important thing if you're a wetland landowner is to get to know your wetland in as many ways as you can. Spend time in it, visit it at different times of the year, walk through it at different times of the year. One really fun way is to keep a little book like Aldo Leopold used to do, where you record the first red-winged blackbird to come in, or the first blooming of this favorite wildflower that you have, or the first duck hatch, and record those from year to year, and you can see things over time. Actually, in this handbook that we're putting together right now for landowners, we're going to be having a big section on how to different ways of getting to know your landowners, land's history, where you can find old historic maps and aerial photos of your property, and other resources to help you get to know it. Because if you can start to understand the way your property used to function historically with natural water flows and whatnot, and then you can learn what's happened now. This road went in, and so that changed the flow of water here, or there's a drain tile system, and that's affecting, that hasn't been removed, even though we're not farming it anymore. that hasn't been removed. So that's affecting water movement. So lots of these things, if you can spend time and get to know, you can learn what happened, and that helps you undo some of those steps or mitigate for some of those steps to try to bring health back to your wetland.
Yeah. Well, there's certainly a lot that could be done, and a lot that is being done, and certainly your organization is.
Well, thank you. We're great, working hard.
You're working very hard, and again, what's your website? We have it up on my Facebook page.
WisconsinWetlands.org.
WisconsinWetlands.org. And Katie, you'll come back and be with us again?
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Katie Belfus is the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. She does a great job, and I'm always pleased to have her join in our conversation, because there's always really lots to talk about when she's with us. Just to mention, tomorrow at 11, Frank Armstrong comes back to give us some advice on saving for a secure retirement. And then at 11:45, how's your prescription eyewear doing? Jim LaLuzerne will answer your questions about eyeglasses. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.